Welcome, y'all! Right. This is the Pre-Game Engineer Tailgate Mirror Racing Podcast, episode number 137. Today is Thursday, March 8th, 2018. I'm Tailgate Mirror Rusty Wallace. I'm joined in the PTM Podcast Studio with Pre-Game Engineer Andrew Sherwin. What's up, dude?
I'm pretty sure this is the first podcast we've ever done where the next day we're getting on a plane to go to Phoenix.
I was about to say, we are officially in our vacation mode.
NASCAR vacation mode.
We could be more excited about today, tomorrow, the next day, and about this show that we're about to do. Before we do it, though, y'all, the PETM Podcast is sponsored by you. That's right. You go to patreon.com/PETM and join that What You Drink Club for as little as $1 a month. Get your free koozie. We've been sending some out to folks just recently. Koozie stickers, all the rest of it. Best part is, every cent in 2018, we're donating to sponsoring drivers, so join the PETM Posse today. Be a part of the sport you love. This week's show is brought to you by our official sponsors at the $5 and up per month level. That's Catherine Kingston, Ashley Stang, Laura Henshaw, Harry Balzania, Mick Rose, Aaron Bearden, Robert Kaplinger, Tony Salt, Colby McClam, Eric Kapner, Ryan Kiefer, Marion Levesque, Patrick Cleary, Jeff Brown, Brandon Crown, Kathleen McDonald, Stacey Wright, Brandon Carl, Billy Workman, Rika Porter, Jumpy Bob, and Les Miller, and welcome to the PETM Posse as an official sponsor, Mr. Jason Rudd. Sherwin, I can't do that in like three breaths anymore.
That was a lot.
That's a lot. We've considered, like, well, should we move that around? Should we do something different with that? But no, I think it's fun just reading that out in the first minute of the show and having fun with people. So thank y'all so much. And we are deep now into some conversations about where that 2017 money goes. So we're going to be super excited if and when that, signatures happen and blah, 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 and that money's burning a hole in our pocket right now, ready to send that out to folks, Sherwin.
100%. 100%. And I just saw, I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing, but looks like we're going to get to talk to him right after this is all wrapped up.
Yes, sir. That's going to be awesome. So, with that,
YouTube crowd saying the sound's on vacation. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll make something happen. But with that, we have a very special guest tonight. She is the driver of the number 25 N29 Capital Partners Toyota for Venturini Motorsports in the ARCA Series. Crew Chief Dave Liner. I'm probably saying that wrong. She's a 2013 ARCA Midwest Tour Rookie of the Year. Let me throw some stats at you, Sherwin. This is pretty cool. She's got a super late model background. 8 career ARCA starts, posted 3 top 10s. 2018, that's this year. This just happened.
This was a couple weeks ago.
Right? Daytona pole winner. She finished 5th in that race. I almost said 8th. I'm wrong. 5th in that race. She's a national spokesperson for something that I am way too aware of as I commute on my daily drive into work in Buckhead here in Atlanta for the People Against Distracted Driving charity, advocating safe driving. And you can find her on Twitter at Natalie Racing. It's Natalie Decker. Natalie, what's happening?
Hey, thank you for having me.
Oh man, thank you so much for being on. This is going to be a blast. We're excited to get this rolling. Sherwin, you got something to say?
Oh, I don't. I mean, I'm excited for Natalie to be here. This is really cool.
Yeah. So this is a boatload of fun. We've been following you for a while, and it's really cool. We're on this side. We're like, oh my gosh, it's Natalie Decker. This is gonna be so cool. This is gonna be fun. We got to like be on our best behavior and stuff,
which we never are.
Yeah, that never works. Natalie, we start the show off the same way. Now I know you're 20 years old, right?
Yep, I'm 20.
So we always start the show with a what you drinking segment, so even if you have a beer in hand, it's probably not best to tell the folks. Just say it's water. But what are you drinking on tonight?
Okay, wait. Let me. I don't know the exact name. Just wait. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if I can pronounce it. Let me ask someone here. How do you pronounce that? La what? Okay, it's bubbly water. It's pineapple strawberry flavored, and the brand is La what? LaCroix?
Oh, LaCroix.
Oh, LaCroix. LaCroix. Yeah.
Yeah, right on.
Is that it?
Now, yeah. You know, the only reason I know
And I'm also drinking water and vitamin water, and that flavor is like the something blueberry pomegranate. It's like a darker red.
You are staying.
I always have a few different flavors and options once.
You are staying well hydrated. Sherwin, at my work, we have free LaCroix. I guess they're trying to, keep us from drinking the sugary stuff or something. But
sure.
I drink a boatload of LaCroix So I'm like, man, I'm all frou-frou now. I'm drinking LaCroix.
And
I'm
that doing lime LaCroix is pretty good with bourbon if you're as long as you're not aching from that sweet tooth.
Right, right. Yeah, that's tasty. The what is it? What's that called? Grapefruit. There's a grapefruit one that's excellent. That's
right, really good with vodka. Right.
Always having to mix it, Sherwin. Sherwin, what are we mixing on tonight?
I think we're drinking good old Jim Beam and Coca-Cola like we have been the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's Coke Zero. I'm you know, shaving the calories.
All right, sweet. Less of a hangover tomorrow. Bodacious, we'll get more into that later.
Right. La Croix is what Roger's saying on there. So, La Croix.
Well, it ain't like the Iroquois Indians.
Might not be
Native
French.
Americans.
You know what?
Excuse me.
We got a Frenchie. I shouldn't say that word. We have a French connoisseur at work, and he said it's La Croix because that's the way they want it, and
that's the way they pronounce it.
They're right, and they don't do the French version. So whatever it is, it's
well, it might even be a Haitian.
I was going to say, or Louisiana or something.
Yeah, Louisiana fast.
So with that, real quick, y'all, we're going to talk about car number 37. It's episode 137. Not a very popular car in terms of longevity, Sherwin. There is one win in the 37, which we've broke our winless streak of 35 and 36. And by the way, I was really proud.
Were we present for that win?
Bobby Isaac. So.
No, we were not.
Doubtful.
We were not.
Yeah. I was proud the other day on our friends Across the Pond, MOATF podcast. They had William Soki on.
Soki!
And they had asked him, how many drivers have won in the 35 car? And he said, well, PTM just did the 35 car on their deal. So I was like, that's awesome. So somebody's listening.
Yeah, I reached out to him and said, you're welcome for the assist.
Yeah. Bobby Isaac had 7 starts in the 37. He had 1 win. It was driven most by John Andretti. He had 54 starts. Jeremy Mayfield had 39 starts. And Chris Buescher, of course, with the 39 starts. Nobody else has started more than 29 times, even though there's been 83 people to drive this car. So 83 people have driven it like less than 29 times. So
wow.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
That is kind of weird.
Some notables, Tony Raines, Kevin LePage, Tiny Lund, Derek Cope, David Gilliland, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, so not a whole lot to talk about on 37, so we'll just talk about our guest here, Natalie Decker. Natalie, tell us, let's just start off with this. What you're doing right now, how it feels to have a full-time ride this year, 2018 ARCA Series full-time ride with Venturini, and how that came about and what you're up to.
It's so super crazy that I have a full ride and that we just raced at Daytona. I still can't believe it. And that we got the pole and everything. So crazy. But I'm super happy to be here. I recently just moved to North Carolina from Wisconsin to be here and to be closer to the team and to the shop and everything. Because I was traveling a lot back and forth. And I only did, I think, 7 races last year. So a full season is 20, and it's a lot more than 7. So I knew I kind of had to be a lot closer and be able to go to the shop whenever. And so I'm really glad I made the move. And I've been living here probably for 4 days now only. So
oh, wow.
Recently.
Oh, wow. So that's like breaking news. Natalie Decker out of Wisconsin. So what part of Wisconsin were you from?
I'm from Eagle River, Wisconsin. Like 3 hours north of Green Bay.
Oh, wow. Like, that's the upper.
Cold.
Man. Yeah,
like, really cold.
I'm in Canada.
That's cold stuff. Welcome to...
I'm in Canada, yeah.
Welcome to the south where it's not nearly as cold.
So is that, like, border with the Upers, the upper peninsula of Michigan?
Yeah, like, I'm 35, 45 minutes away from Michigan because they have that big bridge that connect. Like, you can... I don't even know what the name of it
the
is.
Marinette.
It's super scary, and I won't go on it.
Yeah.
But what's really funny is I just, like, moved into the apartment, and I went, like, to the shop or something for the day, and I left all my windows open just because it was a new apartment, and I wanted, like, all the fresh air to come in, and it was kind of raining. And I had, like, the maintenance guy come and, like, fix some things in the apartment when I was gone. And he came back and was like, we totally know you're from out of town. It's 45 degrees out and your windows are open. You're crazy. And I was like, 45 degrees is not cold.
True story. I wore gloves into work today, Sherwin. It was like 38 or something when I left this morning. I'm like, I'm putting on my gloves. I ain't going to be cold. Yeah. And Natalie's over there with her windows open.
Yeah. She's she's running around with a sundress or something.
Going back to, you know, you talked about that pole at Daytona. What was your reaction when you realized you had the pole? Probably that was I don't know, was it when you got it you knew it, or was it kind of waiting on it later? How did that go down?
Well, for the first time I got told that it went to like the top of the board, I was in my car and I had Chase Elliott spotter,
Eddie DeHaan. I don't
really remember.
Eddie DeHaan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can never pronounce his last name. And so I had him, and it was my first time having him. He was so wonderful. I think I only had him once this year, and I don't think I'll have him again. But he was great for Daytona. And I came around, and it was the lap before I got to the top of the chart, and he was like, okay, you're second. I think Zane Smith was first, or someone else was first at the time. And he's like, but don't worry, it's going to change this next lap. And, you know, I'm, like, focusing so hard that I'm barely probably listening. And then we come around, and he's like, all right, you're at the top. He's like, you're on the pole right now. And I, like, was super excited because, you know, that was the last lap I came in. And everyone was giving me hugs, but it wasn't over yet. There was still, like, two more groups that had to go out and qualify. So I was so nervous. Like, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, I'm going to lose it. Someone is going to beat me. And then no one did. So, like, we all celebrated, and I was super excited about it. And, you know, I went to the lane to take a picture with General Tire and everything. And then went to the media center, but it never really, like, hit me until, like, I went home. Like, I never even after the race. Like, I, like, led everyone to the green flag, and it still, like, nothing felt real until, like, I went home and, like, did a bunch of interviews about it, got to look back on my social media to see it all. Then it, like, really all felt real and really all sunk in then.
That's so cool. So what is it like taking the green flag from that front row at Daytona? I mean, you got to be in, like, a I don't know, business mode, but there's also got to be that sort of in the back of the head. How far forward in the head was it that, oh my gosh, there's a green flag at Daytona?
I was so nervous before the race, but everyone was super, my crew chief, you did pronounce his name right, Dave Liner. That is my crew chief, and he's so good. He's like, he's so calm. So it kept me calm because he's always calm. Like, he never ever seems like anything's going wrong. Like, something could be going so wrong, and he sounds like everything's great. So, like, he's so calm. He kept me calm. And my spotter just talked me through the whole thing, even though, I mean, it wasn't easy, but, like, all I had to do was not miss a shift. So, I mean, he's just like, make this the best start of your life right now. And so we did, and it was cool leading everyone to the green. You can't really see the start. Like, there's a where you, like, the start box, and, like, when they wave the green flag and stuff coming off of four, you couldn't really see where, like, that is or anything. So I just fully had to trust my spotter and listen to him. But he was so good. I trusted him the whole race. He was awesome.
That's fantastic. So 2018, your first season with a full-time ride, and going through, you know, to every track and everything. What's that like right now? What's the difference between what you were doing and what's now? Is it crazy? Is it, you know, every second of every day you're on, you have to be going nuts, or is it just sort of an extension of what you've been doing?
It's different and very exciting because, you know, I don't have to, like, last year I signed with Ventrini for 3 races, and then it turned into 4, then it turned into 6, and then 7. So this year it's like I have a full season. You know, there's not that, like, waiting to know if you're going to have another race or, you know, you have the full season to work with your crew chief and the team, and I know, like, that I'm going to be in the 25 car the whole season and have the same crew chief, same team, and everything. So that's a lot different from last year, and it feels good to know that I'm going to be racing a full season.
That's fantastic. So what are your goals with this season? Now that you're, you know, full-time ride, what are you looking to try to do by the end of it?
There's definitely going to be different goals at every track we go to, but the big two goals that I have right now is get Rookie of the Year and then run top fives.
Run top fives, Rookie of the Year. Those are awesome goals.
Sure, was aggressive. I like it. It's good.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, those are big goals.
So I'm going to move on to the sort of the fun questions. Maybe the stuff you haven't been asked as much. What's your favorite track?
Ooh, okay. Ooh, my favorite track.
Yeah.
Well, that's a hard question. I've been to a lot of racetracks.
Yeah.
My favorite one would have to be, I have the most wins there, so that has to be my favorite. And it's a super late model track where I race my super late, and it's back home in Wisconsin. It's called State Park Speedway. And the Wimmers own it, Scott Wimmer.
Oh, yeah.
His family, I think, in that track, yep. So that is definitely my favorite, or at the top of my list. I hated it when I first started racing there, not going to lie. It was really hard. And then a couple years later, we started winning there, and I loved it.
That's perfect. Tell us about that track. What's the surface? What's the banking? What makes it somewhere where Natalie Decker goes and wins all the time?
I'm pretty sure the racetrack could fit in my apartment, and there's grass growing on it. So it's really rough. There's bumps everywhere. I think it's falling apart in turn 3 and 4, but it works. It's so rough, but it's amazing. And they have the best racing there. It's wonderful. They always have their grandstands always full, and they have, like, at the end of the night, you know, all the fans come down into the pits, and, like, I mean, everyone comes. Like, no one goes home right away. They all come down into the pits, and everyone hangs out afterwards. So it's really, like, that short track feel racetrack, and I really fell in love with it after I started winning, though, because I did not like it at first.
Now, what did it take to go from not liking it to it being your favorite? Like, how was that transition? Was there a point that, like, you got it, or was it a longer transition?
It was actually one of my first wins was there, so that, like, really helped me like the track. I think I was racing a super stock, and so, like, I'll try to tell the story super quick. I started racing stock cars when I was 12, and I was in a 4-cylinder. My first race ever, we, like, wrecked. I got right-reared, and I, like, destroyed the front wall at Pullover. It's in Pullover, Wisconsin, Golden Sand Speedway. And that was the first race my mom watched me in a stock car because it was my first race, so she never watched a race again. So, like, now fast forward a year and a half, I'm racing super stocks. It's a bigger car, faster car, and one of my best friends from high school, I wanted her to come with me to a race, and, like, cause we, like, camp out the whole weekend and, like, make it a huge fun family thing. So I'm like, come experience it. It's really fun. So she, like, hung out with my mom when I was racing and made my mom watch my, like, the full race, and I won at State Park Speedway in this car, and, like, so that became my favorite track. This is the first time my mom watched a full race. My best friend was there, and I think I was the youngest person to win there. I think I was, like, 13 or 14.
Oh, wow.
So, like, it was a great weekend.
That's fantastic.
So that's how it became my favorite track. It was, like, overnight. I was like, all right, I love this place.
So I don't know if you know this, because as you're saying stuff, I'm Googling stuff and image searching and whatnot. If you type in State Park Speedway, Wausau, Wisconsin, into Google image search, the 9th image is a picture of your car, and it says Natalie Decker, and it has your name on it, so, and your face and everything. So you are States Park Speedway as far as they're concerned. That's pretty cool, huh?
And you know what? My sister briefly lived in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Really?
Yeah. Very briefly, but she was there.
We're both from Atlanta or Atlanta suburbs, and we both have strange ties to Wisconsin. I lived in Waukesha, just outside of Milwaukee, for 2.5 years of my childhood when we moved up there, and then that's when I decided I don't like snow the way these guys like snow, and it's cold.
I played a lot of hockey around that area because I played hockey in high school.
So tell us about that. That was among my questions. I saw we got sort of a rundown and heard that you played some hockey. Tell us about playing hockey and how you got into that. And, you know, can you come down here and beat up the boys in Atlanta?
I probably could have when I was in high school. Maybe not anymore. But how I got started is I have an older brother. His name is Leif, L-E-I-F. Sometimes people say Leif, but it's Leif.
Lace.
And, yep, Lace. And he started hockey. I think my mom forced him to play hockey, and he, like, cried every day and hated it. And I came along and watched, and I wanted to be like my brother, so I wanted to play hockey. And finally, he loved it. And I just always loved it. I was probably 4 when I started, or 5. And I started, like, just, like, half-rink stuff, and, like, I couldn't even skate. I'm pretty sure we all wore, like, snow suits that you'd play out in the snow in when we were, like, skating around. And I just did it all through, all the way up until high school and through high school. And it was cool. I first had to start playing on the boys' team because there was no girls' team. It was not really heard of until you got into high school. There was no, like, club teams. So finally, I think I was in 5th grade, they came out with a girls' team. So I got to go play with the girls, which was a lot more fun because the guys were rough. And then I played in high school, and I moved to North Carolina once before while I was still in high school. And what was awesome is my school still let me do online classes through them so I could graduate with my class. And then when I came home in the winter, I was still allowed to jump back in and play hockey with my team.
That's fantastic. I struggle with ice skating. That's a thing, Sherwin, with hockey. And you know it. I had season tickets for the Atlanta Thrashers when they were here. And that what was really cool about that was that I was getting into hockey, watching hockey, right when my wife was getting into watching hockey. So it was one of those sports that, like, me and her at the same time started growing up, quote-unquote, but watching at the same time. So we had the same level of understanding of the game, so it was really fun to go watch the games, and we'd both be confused at the same time, but also be happy at the same time. We knew, you know, it was cool that way. But I always thought, man, playing hockey, first you have to learn how to ice skate, and then you have to learn how to ice skate backwards. And then now you got to learn how to, like, run into somebody while ice skating. Now you got to, like, now you have to hold a stick while running into somebody while ice skating backwards. And now you have to try to, like, shoot this little puck while holding a stick while ice skating backwards into somebody.
And then, like, if you fall, you have to, like, bounce up immediately.
Right. If I fall, it's freaking yard sale, dude. There's everything goes.
That. In practice, like, that's a thing. Like, you skate. Okay, so you know how there's red lines and blue lines and stuff? We skate, and at every line, you have to drop down your knees into your belly and get back up as fast as you can. Keep skating to the next line, drop down. And, like, so we practice falling and giving up.
Oh, screw that.
Practicing falling and skiing.
Right? Like, all of my practice involving me on ice skates is trying not to fall. And here they are practicing falling and getting up. So
I think it's one of those things where, like, if you, it's one of those things that's indigenous. Like, if you grow up learning how to skate, like, when you're so close to the ice, like, it couldn't possibly hurt you to fall.
Right.
Like, you develop this level of bounce. Go ahead, Natalie.
No, I was skating the other day, actually, with some friends, and we were just playing 2-on-2, and I wasn't wearing any, like, pads or anything, just, like, skates, helmet, gloves, and a stick, and I fell a few times, and it, like, with no pads, and the ice really doesn't hurt when you fall. It's like you really gotta, like, fall right on your knee or your elbow or something bad.
Man,
so that's why we wear knee pads and elbow pads when we play in real games.
I'm a wuss, dude. Like, no, I'm not falling. So I got a coworker. So we've got a.
I think it's because of that slide out factor that when you hit, you actually you don't. Like, all your momentum doesn't stop.
It's mostly forward momentum. There's not a whole lot. I mean, you can only fall so far. I don't know. We can try to justify it to ourselves. So I've got a coworker. We've got a satellite office in Mequon, Wisconsin, and he doesn't live too far from there. And he goes out with a hose pipe and builds up these boards and then just fills it up with water in November. And it just freezes over, and he's got a whole ice hockey rink in his backyard. And he was telling me about this. I'm like, I don't understand those words, dude. You have to speak English to me. What is that? Well, you're so talking about making your own thing. Might as well be speaking Greek, German, ancient, Egyptian, Latin, whatever. I don't understand.
Well, we also might have to translate for the audience on what a hose pipe is. Rusty's in this very unique vein of Southerners that call a hose a garden hose pipe.
It's a hose pipe.
And I know what he's saying, but... A lot of people don't.
We got hose pipes and we got roach bugs.
And so we had palmetto bugs or roaches.
Yeah.
Calling palmetto bugs because you didn't want people to get all freaked out that you got roaches. But trust me, unless you pay an exterminator 24 hours a day, if you live in the South, you got roaches.
It's a fair, that's good awareness, Sherwin, because I was somewhere, I think I was at work. Like, with people that were around the South, at least, you know, a lot of the folks in Atlanta didn't grow up in Atlanta or whatever. And I said hose pipe just as a comma, you know. Yeah, I was outside with the hose pipe just trying to, and they go, with what? With the hose pipe, you idiot. What do you think? Natalie, are you out, you know anything about hose pipe?
No. No. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You started talking about roaches, and now I'm grossed out, like, looking around in my room.
Well, you're in that. Well, you moved
Being
to the
in an
south.
Apartment complex, you might be all right.
Well,
they probably have a pretty aggressive spraying program.
True. She did move to the south in the winter, though, so she's probably. She doesn't know yet that.
Yeah, they have those in North Carolina.
I came back from New Hampshire.
Yep.
And there was a beverage that I hadn't finished that I left on the end table.
No.
Had a roach in it.
Oh, boy. Well,
he was deader than hell because that was a stout drink that evidently I decided not to finish.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. If you give me a choice of last drink, I'll take that stout, I guess.
Yeah.
So good on the roach
club. Killing that roach.
Oh, man. Yeah, you'll become immune to those. And if my wife is any example, who she grew up in Massachusetts, or not in Massachusetts, in Connecticut. She's going to kill me now. She hates the cold now.
Right?
Once you move
eventually
down here.
Eventually, it does go away.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So with that, so we talked about your favorite track, and we talked about hockey. Tell me about what's a favorite place to eat outside of a track that you've found along the way?
Oh, lots of places. I travel a lot, so I've seen Cookout a lot. Mm-hmm. But since I moved here, I ate it like 3 times. I love Cookout.
Cookout, okay.
I went to L.A., and I had a dirt race out there. Then I stayed a few extra days because now my brother's a model out in L.A. Long story short, he lives there. And models out there, so I went and visited him after my race, and I had In-N-Out, OMG, best thing ever. But then I was in Minnesota at my boyfriend's house, or at his parents' house, and his stepmom said Freddy's, or I think that's what it's called. Oh, my goodness. They're only in the Midwest, and it is like, I swear, it is like, almost, I think it's better than In-N-Out, and I could never say that ever, even though I only ate In-N-Out a few times. But this place that they have in the Midwest is like, I've only had it like once or twice, I think, but I will like fly home, I think, just to eat there again. So good. They have special sauce just for their french fries, and like a little station that says like french fry sauce. And then there's like a hot version and a normal original version.
Nice.
I have no idea what it is.
Well,
but it is amazing.
There's a few things that we can, you know, we're pretty proud in the South here, but there's a few things we can learn. And if you're going to give me a straight up French fry sauce with, you know, hot version and normal version, I mean, shoot, they've got something figured out for sure.
Evidently.
Right.
But, so did I hear in there that you've got a brother who is a model in L.A.? Is that what I heard?
Yes, I do. That's Leif, the one who used to cry when he was a little boy playing hockey. Oh, and then one time, he, like, after, like, you know, you skate and shift for, like, about a minute, then you come off. Well, his coach, like, turned around and was like, to my mom, Amy, something's wrong with Leif. And she's like, oh, no, what? And he's like, he's not crying when he came off the ice. It was really funny.
That is
so, yes,
funny.
He's a model in L.A.
Wow.
Crazy. I'm the race car driver.
Talented family.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, your family and obviously your cousins and stuff are into racing. And then the one person said, nah, I'm not sure about this racing thing. I'm going to go model in L.A. Fantastic. So
yeah,
what
all four used to race go-karts together. So, like, Paige and Claire, my brother and I, we all traveled in our families, like, for 2 years straight all over the U.S. and raced karts together.
My family
it was crazy.
Is...
And then he...
Yeah, go ahead.
And then he stopped racing because he wanted to play hockey. So, and he was getting into high school, so... He had to quit racing to take hockey more serious.
Now, if we...
And then he never went and played juniors. He went to be a model. It was kind of crazy, but awesome.
So if we had him on the podcast next week, what story would he tell about Natalie Decker when she was younger? Because you've already you know, given some...
Spilled his beans.
Yeah. Yeah. So quid pro quo.
He would say a lot of things. I pick on my brother a lot.
That's awesome.
If you look him up on Instagram, his name is I Am Leif Eric.
Okay.
And that's his name on Instagram. Look him up. He's a model. Wait till you see him.
That's like, fantastic. Oh, good for him. That's awesome. Sherwin... I feel very boring in comparison. And, I mean, I love my family and all that, but we're not, like, racing, and my cousins aren't racing, and my brother's not a model. I don't have a brother, but it's –
Right?
What about certain families that everybody is doing something that's awesome like that? I shouldn't be like that. My sister teaches underprivileged kindergartners, and it's very cool. But, shoot, you know – We don't race.
You know? No, we don't race.
You know, I do software.
My sister's an engineer, which is cool.
No.
That's cool.
I'm just messing with you.
Yeah. No, I mean, no racing, though. No,
yeah,
no racing,
yeah.
Nowhere. I have to, like, teach. I mean, my dad will occasionally ask a question about the racing stuff.
Yeah.
And I, like, have to make sure I don't go too deep because he don't care about, like, deep.
Right,
to
right.
Service level. Heard about your driver, did all right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad. Appreciate Jordan. You reading the paper.
Sure. Yeah, reading the paper. So, Natalie, I did a little bit of homework, and I noticed that you have a Wikipedia page, and I always love to ask our guests who have Wikipedia pages what that was like the first time you saw that, and then were you like, no, that ain't right, or that's about right, or what your reaction was there.
I have a Wikipedia page.
You sure do.
Yes, you do.
Oh, man, this is news. All right. All right. So
it even includes personal life.
You know what? I'm going to go.
No, I'm scared. You're going to read it? Oh, gosh.
Yes, I'm going to read it.
Oh, we got to read the personal
life.
This is
why we do this stuff. This is why we're here.
This is going to be fun. There's nothing bad here.
No, this is going to be fun.
But you can tell us whether or not it's actually accurate.
So the picture is with you in Victory Lane in 2016, and you're holding a pumpkin. What was that story?
Okay, so long story short, I had a crew chief for a few years, and then, like, we both went our separate ways. So, like, halfway through a season, he quit and went and did his thing, and then I had to find a ride. So my dad, a big race team, Nason Motorsports, is a big team up in the Midwest. So we bought a few races with them, and that was a fall race. And I think I got like third or second or something. And so, yeah, I think I got second. So like the winner, second, and third all go in victory lane together. And the track owner, who is really good friends with the team I was racing for, is like super crazy fun. But like, I think he sold out that night and sold all his like food and beer and drinks, everything. Like, he was such a good night. He was so happy. And like, I think he was happy that like I got second. And he was throwing like straw, you know, like, because it was like Halloween and, you know, like straw from like a farm and stuff. They had like decorated like it was Halloween. He was throwing it all over my car. And he's like, I'm so sad I don't have a second place trophy for you or something. So he like gave me a pumpkin to hold because I got second.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is so awesome.
The pumpkin.
The second place pumpkin.
And I kept it as long as I could. And I kept it on my front porch in Wisconsin. And it died. And I kept it there until I think animals ate it because I was so proud of it.
I love this. I love the pumpkin story.
All right, I'm fixing to read the personal life section.
So I read it real quick. One of the big things, I guess, is your family comes from a background of like snowmobile racing. What's the story there?
Yes. So my dad and his three brothers, and my dad's the youngest out of all of them, they raced snowmobiles growing up. I think two of his brothers, Alan and I want to say Mike. So there's Alan, Mike, and Steve, and Alan and Mike, I think, raced for a factory, and that was, like, a big thing back in the day. It's not so much anymore, I don't think. But, so, and I believe it was Skidoo. So they raced, and they were, like, crazy. It was Team Decker. They've just recently got inducted into the Hall of Fame. The whole team did. And wow. My grandma and grandpa started a Decker snow tour, and they took snowmobiles and went to like Iceland, Alaska, Wyoming, all over, and did these tours, and people would fly in, ride their sleds, and they would give them a tour around. So like, my family was really big into snowmobiling, and it's super cool. My dad owns the World Championship Snowmobile Derby in Eagle River, Wisconsin, where I live. And he, if you win there, you're a world champion for life. And he won there in 87. That's... So then he bought the track, I think, in 89.
That's fantastic. So true story number two for me tonight, Sherwin, is, first off, I had never seen a snowmobile until we moved to Wisconsin and didn't even know what it was. But speaking of stuff, I didn't know what it was. So down in the South, you know, I was young. I was 7 or 8 years old, but I was mowing the lawn. Like, I had to pull on the ripcord and everything on a 18-inch lawn boy for 1.2 acres of
land.
Oh, that's
a lot of walking.
Oh my gosh! And it was just normal, so you didn't know any different. But when we got up to Wisconsin, I didn't know what these snowblowers were that people had. Mm-hmm. And when we moved up there, I told my dad, what are they doing? They've got like a snow mower. So my family to this day calls it a snow mower.
Right.
Calls any snow blower a snow mower because of me at 9 years old or 8 years old whenever we moved up there. So that's, like I said, to this day I call it a snow mower. Even to people who don't know the context of everything I just told you. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, he's out there with his snow mower doing his thing. Like, whoa, 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 back up, brother. Snow mower?
Like, you skipped, yes, sir, a couple letters there.
Yeah, it's a snow mower. What do you want? Oh, man. So, Natalie, so we continue going along here. The Deckers also race snowmobiles alongside Danica Patrick's family, and your aunt evidently introduced Danica Patrick's parents. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so my aunt actually raced snowmobiles too, and she was married to Mike. That's how she's my aunt. So my uncle Mike and her were married, and they're not anymore, but we kept Auntie Sue because we love her so much, and she comes with me to all my races now and everything. She's amazing. And she raced, and Danica's mom was on her team, and, like, I think she, like, I don't know exactly what she did. I think maybe stuff with carbides. I really don't know. I don't know much about sleds anyways, but, so I'm just guessing. But then my dad raced against TJ, Patrick, Dan's dad, and they're all friends. And so my aunt set up Danica's parents on a date. So her mom, Danica's parents got set up on a date by my aunt, and then Danica's middle name is Sue, after my Aunt Sue.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty cool.
That's super. I just got goosebumps here. I know it happens like twice an episode.
Well, you were talking about sleds.
Oh, you know what? And I'm looking at my forearm. I'm sunburnt as hell from Atlanta. It's starting to peel. It started doing the peel. I got goosebumps. I'm like, I've got more than goosebumps there. Anyway.
So my first time on a sled was in 2004. Yeah, 2004. And I was scared to death of it.
Right.
And I tipped it
over.
It's
like a motorcycle without wheels. This is a devil.
And I was always scared of motorcycles. And I had just started getting into horses, too.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, man, this thing is like, I don't know, sometimes at some points less controllable than a horse, which has like an actual brain where it can do whatever it wants. And I dumped it over a couple times. But I remember the second year when the sleds came in to rent, you know, like the kids are all fired up. The kids at the golf pro shop where I was working became like the snowmobile rental shop.
Okay.
And the cross-country ski rental shop. And the guys were like, all right, so we got to test these things out, make sure the spark plugs are good. And I'm like, all right, y'all watch this. Home, just wide open off the driving range. And
oh,
like,
Lordy.
You can look back and see where, like, there was tracks, and then there was no tracks for, like, 100 feet. And then I landed. Like, it's amazing what 1 year of riding this sled will give you on the confidence level.
Oh, yeah, and one redneck. Hey, hold my beer. Watch this.
Right, hold my beer.
Natalie, something we love asking every racer as well. Was there a time where you showed up at racetrack? And I can't remember who asked us this question first, Sherwin. It's been many, many episodes
ago. I think
this is
Laura's question.
Could be, but something that you forgot when you showed up at the racetrack and what you had to do to overcome that.
Oh, goodness. Let me think.
We've had drivers tell us, like, helmets, and Jeff Gluck forgot pants.
Yeah, pants.
I forgot my shoes once.
Shoes.
Shoes.
That could be problematic.
Yeah. So, did you have to borrow some from somebody?
Actually, my grandparents, I think, had to bring them. Whatever you forgot, it was, like, shoes or gloves or there was something, like, from my hands to my feet. Maybe it was my earbuds, I don't remember. But my grandparents come and watch all my races.
Yep.
And they were driving through, so we had them stop at my house and pick it up and bring it to me. So I think it was my shoes. So I think I like just kept my tennis shoes on, and then when they got there I put my race shoes on.
Well, there's
so I don't think anyone really even noticed.
There's something that the North / Midwest and the South have come to agree on is the word tennis shoes. So I'm digging that. I don't know who told who what the deal was, but I know there's like sneakers and I know there's like other words for it, but hey, tennis shoes where it's at.
Tennis shoes.
Yeah, right on.
I don't know who the hell says sneakers anymore because it's damn sure tennis shoes.
Oh, I was like 19 years old the first time I played tennis.
I didn't even know tennis was a sport when I knew that I had tennis shoes on.
Right. That was just it was a adjective for the shoes that you have.
It could have been TENNA, tennis shoes.
Yeah, tennis shoes. Yeah, for sure. So with that, Sherwin, let's start tearing it down with Las Vegas.
Vegas,
baby. So we went to Vegas. Natalie, did you catch the Vegas race?
Well, there was like one car that went to Vegas.
Yeah, right. Natalie, did you catch that race?
No, because I was just moving into my apartment.
That's
so
right.
I didn't have anything set up.
That's right. So the big thing, I mean, the big story, like twice this week now, was A, Harvick destroying everybody on that.
Harvicking changed definitions in 48 hours.
True. Yes, that's a good point. Yes. So that verb became something new not too long after that. But another race dominated by Harvick with hardly anybody on the lead lap, a lot of tire fall off, et cetera, et cetera. Which was surprising for a lot of people at Phoenix. Phoenix. Vegas. I'm thinking next week.
Got it on the brain, man.
I know, man. It's on the brain. I know. I'm so excited. But for Vegas, that's kind of something new there. But, of course, all that sort of taken away. Everything but the W. Like, they took away the points. They took away the accolades.
All the playoff points is the big deal.
Right. All the playoff points, the stage wins, everything. They've taken it away because of this whole roof deal for Harvick. And so, I don't know. Sherwin, what's the deal?
Well, apparently it's very well described in the rule book that if you monkey around with the transition from the roof sheet metal to the rear window glass, and it's same thing on the front, but if you mess around with that, they're going to be pretty vigilante.
So I think it was Gluck that first posted, I don't know first, but he posted something that became popular, and all he said, it was interesting, because all he said was, that was the whole tweet. I think it might have been, you know?
What, did he post a Reddit link or whatever?
Maybe so, and he was like, and all it was a picture of Harvick's car. It was like a snapshot of him going really fast, and the whole rear end was just caved in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so that was the Reddit thing that went wild and wonky right after the race.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole conversation around that was, remember how a few years ago at the Masters when somebody called in and said Tiger didn't replace his ball in the right spot?
Right.
Like, this whole, like, HD television is so vivid that, like, fans can see stuff and they're, like, tweeting it. Mm-hmm. So NASCAR Reddit went absolutely bananas because somebody caught a picture of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like 18 hours of people we don't like in the media world, and I'm not going to mention his name, talking about how, well, this could have been Photoshopped. You know,
oh, Lord.
And so, like, it took an extra 24 hours for NASCAR to finally yesterday say what they were going to say about it.
Right.
But, evidently, very unceremoniously in the rule book, it says, if you monkey with this transition, it's going to be bad.
Right. I think you posted something great on the Twitter just saying, hey, when we say cheater in NASCAR, it's almost a term of endearment.
Oh, absolutely.
And they were, like you said, monkeying around with something they probably shouldn't have monkeyed around with.
Well, they monkeyed around in a space that wasn't super gray. It was, like, mostly black.
Right. Yeah, it's straight up black and white. Natalie, what's been your experience with in the series that you're running with folks bending the rules, we'll say?
With the ARCA series that I'm running in right now, when my car goes through tech, I don't really like to go with it. At Daytona, my car was in tech, and it was in there for a long time. My crew chief was too, and I went in to say hi, and then I was like, yeah, there seems like there's like a lot of just tension in that whole building all the time. So I was like, I'm just gonna go back to the hauler. So I tried to stay away. But with my super late, it's really funny. I'm in short track racing. I went through tech with my crew chief there, and because we have to be with the car and sit in the car while it rolls over the scales and everything. And my crew chief back at home, Kyle Wolosik is his name, and he also spots for me for the short tracks in the ARCA series. And he's funny to listen to when we go through tech. So I like going and listening to that. But I only went for Daytona. I only went through and just said hi to my crew chief as I went back to the hauler.
So... Sherwin, I don't know what else to say. So there was 9 cars on the lead lap at the end of the race. Say that Harvick doesn't dominate that race. Does that mean there's still 9 cars on the lead lap and everybody else is within bounds? Or did he set a pace that required everybody else to...
I think he set a pace that... like, so if you removed him from that equation, I think you're looking at 11 cars on the lead lap.
Right.
Because the second place car was, I think, 3.5 seconds behind.
That's within a standard deviation.
Yeah, I mean, it's real. I mean, it's not like, I mean, he ran away with it in terms of laps led and most fast laps. Like, he ran 64 most fast laps. That is rare.
That's strong. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Wow. Like,
you don't see that much. You saw that. So we saw that in a very unique perspective. We saw that when Casey Kane blew up his transmission at Pocono 2012 from the second row, and he went in and they changed the transmission. He came out 50 laps later, and he ran 65 of the next. but he didn't have any reason to be racing anybody.
Right, right.
So very unique for the leader of the race to run that many of the fastest laps. They obviously had something. They obviously were gaining an advantage. How much of an advantage, we don't know. NASCAR decided it was pretty significant. I think if they don't mess with the car, Harvick runs away with that race anyway.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So that's the weird part about that. But like you said before, they're pushing the envelope. So
hey, you know when the best time to get caught cheating is?
Right out of the
second week in March.
Yeah.
Or the first week in March.
Yeah, yeah. After you got caught for cheating and win
what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do.
Yeah, win the week before. Here's my question. So Vegas, the cup race was universally, I would say, panned as not a very good race.
It was only 36% on Gluck's poll.
And
it was only 31% on mine.
And compare that to Atlanta, which had a pretty decent, like,
it was
65, yes.
What, 65-35 or something along those lines?
Yeah, yeah, that it was a good race. Now, we went to Atlanta. We didn't go to Vegas. I imagine if I went to Vegas, there were other storylines I might have watched. What's the difference between that Atlanta race and that Vegas race? Because the similarities are very similar in that Harvick leads the whole thing. Leads most of it. Tire fall off is a big ordeal.
It did matter.
Nine cars on the lead lap in Vegas, 13 on the lead lap in Vegas, or maybe 12, whatever it was, because I think I even tweeted, I was like, there were 21 cars that finished on the lead lap combined in the last two races.
Yeah.
And I might have done the math wrong because
it was 12 at
drinking
Atlanta,
beer.
9 at Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the difference between what was, I wouldn't say universally a good race at Atlanta. There were certain people who thought it wasn't, but that flip-flop, what was the difference there? And I'll give a quick shout-out, Mick Rose, at GoDucks42_Mick. And Natalie, I know it's been a while since you've talked, so let's have you start this one. What is your definition of what a good race is when you're watching a race? What's a good race for you?
Ooh, that's a good question. Just a lot of, like, side-by-side racing. And a lot of, like, I like short track because there's a lot of moving people around and rubbing each other. So all the short tracks are really fun to watch. And really a lot of the races are exciting, but the short tracks are really, really exciting.
Yeah, I think Sherwin, I would say the same thing. What makes a good race is some side-by-side stuff. For me, strategy, because I've got that nerd brain, you know? And so I want to see tire strategy. I want to see pitch strategy. I want to see something. How many times do we see guys do this off strategy and it not work? I like, you know, a good race for me is some guys doing this weird strategy and then it works. But it still comes back to the question of what was the difference between Atlanta and Vegas. And it's hard for me to answer that question because I was at Atlanta and I wasn't at Vegas. So I enjoyed one. And quite frankly, I mean, I watched the Vegas race and I was just like, yeah, not interesting. Also, it's worth pointing out the Vegas race is 100 miles shorter than the Atlanta race.
Right. So I thought everybody loved the fact that we could shorten these races. Clearly they did not. That's not an aspect. That's not a variable that's involved here. I think what the main difference, if you just say, all right, let's forget about all the other racing. Let's compare Atlanta to Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest difference is you saw some genuine excitement and maybe a little bit of scariness with how much faster new tires were. And so you saw weird things happening on entries and exits to corners because so many cars are getting passed by somebody who just put on tires.
Yep.
Now, Vegas had tire fall off. It was great to see that nobody could take two and make that work.
Yep.
We don't need that in NASCAR anywhere because, you know.
But I mean, so here's the thing. I like strategy, though. So if there's a place where you can take two and that be a strategy thing, I'm okay with it. Yeah, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with it. I like to see how it plays out, in other words. But anyway, to your point.
No,
keep going.
I mean, strategy's great. I think one of the biggest differences between Vegas and Atlanta is just that there was nearly as much overtake.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't see nearly as much. Holy crap, the leader just entered turn three 45 miles an hour faster than a pack of guys that looked like they just threw out the parachute, and now he's got to figure out how to drive around them.
And then some dude in 23rd, three laps down, passes the leader.
Right. Or that too, because we saw that, plenty of that too, where maybe you're about to go a lap down, you go, screw it, I'm going to come in and get tires. I'll pass the leader before he wants to get tires. We know tires are going to wear out before anybody runs out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't quite know that at Vegas.
Yep.
We may be there now, though.
Yeah.
I think Vegas has the potential to be better, but I think one of the biggest things is what makes a good race is two guys arguing for the same space. And we did not see a lot of that at Vegas.
That is exactly, I think, what Natalie was saying there, and I like the way you put it. Two guys arguing for the same space. Natalie, what do you think?
Well, I didn't get to watch any of those races, but yeah.
yeah. And that's got to be way more stressful as a race car driver when you're arguing for that same space. But I think it also maybe feels like such a bigger accomplishment at the end. Maybe I'm projecting my thoughts onto you. What do you think?
Yeah, good race. Definitely makes the win. I mean, a win's a win, and they all feel great, but when you really have to push yourself to race someone else to the finish and side by side, it does make it just a little more exciting.
Right. So, Sherwin, let's gas it up. I usually say this. I usually say something like, we're going to Phoenix, and I mean we in the, royal context.
The royal context.
Right.
The series... The National Touring Series are going to Vegas. The Xfinity cars and the Cup cars are going to Vegas.
This time it's not figurative. It's literal. We are going to Vegas. Going to Phoenix. I can't get anywhere.
Tickets downstairs on your kitchen counter to both races.
Which, by the way, once again, I've said it on the podcast. I call them up and to order stuff, to order the tickets. And they say, hey, we know we see your favorite driver is Casey Kane. Do you want us to print Casey Kane's picture on the front of the tickets? I'm like... Hell yes!
Right, why not?
So there's some about, like, I shouldn't care about that. You know what I mean? I shouldn't care.
Well, they shouldn't give you the choice if they don't want you to care. But obviously they know you do.
Good point. So when they do it, I get excited. I'm like, yeah, I want my driver on the ticket, so print it off. Yeah, why not? So maybe we'll have to amend something at some point, but when they ask you, you're like, yes, I want that. Natalie, have you ever been out west?
Yes, I have. I was just in California for a dirt race a couple months ago. And then once, I think I was in seventh grade, a friend of mine that raced karts against me was racing in Vegas, and literally in the parking lot at the Rio Hotel. They set up a course there. And my family and I, we all flew out to hang out with his family and watch him race.
Oh, that's awesome. So what do you think? Is there any difference, like big differences, between racing out west versus racing out in the Midwest or north or down south?
Well, I only did a dirt race out west, and it was an invitational race with Yamaha. Their R1GT, like the prototype cars they came out with. So I really don't know. The farthest, I haven't gone out west really that far with racing cars or anything other than that Yamaha car. And that was just, I think it was 8 of us, maybe. So
mm-hmm.
I really can't tell you.
Well, the PTM Podcast Boys, we're going to be posting up at the Traveler's Inn in Phoenix.
Woo-woo!
So if anybody is near the Traveler's Inn Phoenix, I don't even know where it is. We're like taking Lyft.
I think it's west of the city, about halfway between the airport and the racetrack.
So whatever is the local watering hole.
Oh, I saw there was places to go water hole.
Well, that was why I chose that exact spot too.
Walking distance.
There were places closer to the track, but we're a little...
Less drinky.
Right. But the place we're staying at is a little more seedy. but has walking like this is our kind of place, dude.
Yeah,
this is what we do. So with that, it is time for picks. I didn't load up the audio this time for picks, so sorry. But
well, we got no Dale Jr. this week.
I know. It's lost in my in the thing. I know. I was trying to think ahead.
Trevor, start your engines.
Well done. Good job. So we got to do picks for Phoenix. Let's let our guest go first and tell us, Natalie, who you're going to pick to win the Phoenix Cup race.
I'll pick Martin Truex, so I got to stick with him.
Great pick. Yeah, I mean on this length of track and on this sort of deal, and it's his time. It's Toyota's time. I like that pick, Sherwin.
Oh boy, you know what? As much as I want to say, I mean, we know this is Harvick's track, right? He's won eight times.
Right.
As well as his teammate has been running, I want to give a shout out to Clint. I'm going to say Clint Boyer in the 14 car.
There you go. I'm doing something similar that you just did, which is I think the Harvick momentum is insane right now, but in the last, like you said, 48 hours, that kind of got the parachute, the anchor, the brakes.
Oh yeah.
Everything kind of hit right now. But guess who has been the bridesmaid in the last but not the bride in the last two races is Brad Keselowski.
Oh, good call.
And so I think Brad Keselowski.
Ford's running good.
Oh, Ford's running good and he I think has the momentum now. I shouldn't even call it like a sneaky thing, but I mean he's sniffing.
No, he's been right running there. Really good.
Yeah, yeah. So he's right there ready to go. So with those picks and with us going to Phoenix, obviously you're going to get a lot of content from us. We're excited to bring that to you.
Periscope's going to be on fire this weekend.
Yes, sir. So we've got two off-the-wall questions. Bodacious at Bodacious Beer sent us one. Sherwin, give us the context here. What's the story?
So our buddy Bodacious, been a great interactor on the Twitter space, lives up in Wisconsin.
There you go.
Over near La Crosse, I believe. Went to a bottle swap event. I think it was Sunday, which is maybe a bad choice.
Got to work the next day.
If you work one Monday through Friday. Yeah. And got absolutely hammered. But was in bad shape for Monday and Tuesday, and then like barely even wanted to talk to anybody on Wednesday.
Oh, God.
So he's like, we know y'all are... What did he say? He said, "You guys are purveyors of the drinking society. How do you prevent yourself from being completely wrecked the next day?" And so what I would say is, like, first of all, you got to know your limits. Like,
true.
You got to understand what you're capable of.
We're mid 30s now, and
he's older than we are by a few years.
Well, shoot, I was about to say
you got to understand what your boundaries are, what your capabilities are. If you don't understand what your capabilities are, you're bound to make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, always be hydrated. Always be hydrated.
Get your hydration
in.
Start. Get that Natalie Decker LaCroix vitamin water.
Absolutely.
And what was the other thing you're drinking on there, Natalie?
And I'm drinking water, vitamin water, and then that pineapple.
LaCroix.
Yeah, the LaCroix deal. Yeah, absolutely.
Stay hydrated on non-sugar beverages when you're drinking your beverages. If it's beer,
mm-hmm.
the higher the alcohol content, the more the sugar, which means the more water you should add back in as you go.
Right. Now, let's say you've, I agree with all that, but now you're at that point the next day.
You're already wrecked.
Yeah, you didn't do all that. So I'm saying, here's my thing, Bodacious. For me, it's obviously you're gonna wake up at like 6:30 a.m. That's the first problem in this whole ordeal.
Right.
I'm probably going to wake up at 6:30 a.m. tomorrow.
Right. That's probably going to happen because right after this, it's fixing to go down.
Right. So.
Because we had a 4-hour plane flight to sleep it off.
So, here's my advice. Number one is wake up and just down water until you can't do the water no more. Number two, Taco Bell's, mister. Like, Taco Bell is your friend right now. I know it's
sodium.
Usually,
make sure you get some potassium in there, but sodium helps in the near term. It's faster reacting to pull water into your body.
And at the Taco Bell, you have to drink Dr. Pepper. So you got to get that sugar.
That's a good call.
You got to get it. So get yourself. I order $10.
Sugar settles the stomach.
Order $10 worth of crap on the menu. That's going to be more food than you can eat.
Yeah.
And then get that sugar in you.
Gordita crunches.
Listen to me, honestly, my friend. Go back home, drink a beer, and then go take a nap. You'll wake up 100% drink, and you're ready for tomorrow, or you're ready for that evening.
Oh, yeah. As soon as, like, that, another route to this finish line would be drink water. If you got a banana around, get you some potassium in you.
True.
Or an avocado, ton of potassium in avocado as well. Grapefruit juice, a lot of potassium. Try to stay away from the ones that are just the juicy, sugary stuffs.
Yep.
And then that Bloody Mary.
That
tomato juice.
You gotta have that
absolute magic.
Yep, the pickled asparagus and that sort of
and
stuff.
And get you a pickle. Pickle's got a lot of sodium. It lets you hold water. That's what your brain wants. When your brain hurts and it's pounding, it's because there's no water in there.
Right. So Natalie, take it from a couple of experts on being hungover. with that advice, is that something you think you can follow?
That's something I can. I don't know.
Well, this will be a helpful hint for race fans everywhere.
Right.
We know race fans like to drink.
And for Natalie, in a year from now, she will come back to this episode. Here's what you'll do, Natalie. You'll go, oh crap, I feel like hell. What do I do?
We'll queue up PETM 137.
Right.
Fast forward like 57 minutes.
Yep. And you'll be going to Taco Bell. You'll be getting you that Dr. Pepper. And that LaCroix, you'll pour it down the trash. It'll be time to do that. With that, that brings us to Strange with Stank. Ashley J. Stank sends us a question this week. She says, Natalie, have you ever got stuck in a yoga pose? I don't know if you do yoga or not, but I love that question. Have you ever been stuck and needed to like ask for help and been like, all right, listen, I'm in a bad way. Can y'all just like
somebody
you know
just knock me over?
Help and, me out here.
Reset.
Yeah, just say, yeah, what's the deal?
No, I've never been stuck in a yoga pose. But one time, I was like trying on this dress at a store, like at a boutique or something, and my mom was like still out looking for like cute clothes, and I was like, Mom, come in here. And so she had to come in the dressing room, and we were like both sweating, trying to get this dress off me. For some reason, something broke on it, and it got stuck. And like we were stuck in the dressing room with that dress stuck on me for at least an hour and a half.
Oh my god!
Wow.
Oh my gosh! I mean, at
but
that
never
point,
got stuck in a yoga pose.
At that point, you just hand over the money and then just start going at it with a pair of scissors, huh?
Right, I should have.
Yeah. So Sherwin. Ever got stuck in a yoga pose? Actually, so Ashley did send out for the fellas any compromising physical positions. So for what it's worth, for about 3 years there, I actually did. I was going to yoga classes and stuff, and I was in the yoga thing. Here's the thing. I've got pretty flexible legs because my legs are really long, so I can do like the leg stuff. Me and Sherman look about the same height right here. Sitting down, but then when we stand up, I've got a couple inches. Just it's all legs. I'm nothing but legs, right? I have certainly gotten myself into a position where I was like, yeah, I got this thing. And then they're like, all right, now stand up and go back to down dog. And I'm like, no, can't do that. Sorry. I just need to shuffle out of here and go get in a hot shower, I guess. So there's been some leg position things. I think one of them's called... It's either like dolphin pose or something like that, where you put one leg up under you and then you like stretch forward and one leg's behind you and one leg's up under you and then you come up into
How
like
many
this,
legs you got over.
I got like 16 legs and octopuses ain't got nothing on me. And then there's like lotus position where like you do it like you're sitting Indian style, but it's opposite, so your feet are pointed up, and I can do that all day, but I can't get out of it today.
Right.
So I've been stuck a couple times where I thought I was the man. And then they said, all right, now go do this. And you're like, no. Y'all got to, toss out the parachute on this one.
You know what they call that Seton style now is crisscross applesauce. So they're
like, oh, because you can't do Indian style. I was just
no. Like, you're good. I'm just saying. I wanted to be. It's funny. We're here for comedy, right?
Mostly. Like,
word police. We ain't having it. I ran into that earlier this week because of something I said a couple weeks ago.
Heck with that. Yeah, we're having fun.
We're not having word police around here.
Natalie Decker, thank you so much for joining. I know we've probably kept you up way longer than you needed to, and you probably had to plug your phone in about 10 or 12 times. So thank you so much for joining. Tell the folks where they can find you, what you're up to, and what's going on.
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I got a website, nataliedeckerinc.com, and it shows you how to get hero cards, and you can buy sweatshirts and t-shirts on there. And that's about it.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for being on. I hope you had fun. We have had an absolute blast talking with you and stories and stuff. Hopefully, everybody on the podcast,
yeah,
as
we
always say, hopefully everybody had a laugh and everybody had a learn something. So thank you so much for joining. With that, we're going to close out the show. Sherwin, everybody knows where they can follow us at. You go to ptmpodcast.com. You follow us on Twitter at ptmpodcast, Instagram, blah, 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 all the normal places. Close us out, Sherwin.
Yeah, well, what they don't know is that we are going to be on the Lap Traffic Podcast.
Holy crap.
Episode number 60 on Tuesday night.
Oh, my goodness.
In addition to our episode on Thursday night, they can follow us, obviously, like you said, at PTM Podcast and all the places. They can follow me at Pregame Engineer. They can follow you at Tailgate Mayor. They can follow Instagram. Our channel on YouTube is PTM Racing Podcast, just like everything else. Google that stuff.
All right. We'll talk to y'all next week. And if you're going to Phoenix or if you want to see us at Phoenix, hey, just give us a follow or whatever, and we'll definitely be talking to y'all soon. Thank you for joining. Talk to y'all later.
Whoop, whoop.